That's nice. What are we listening to, Daniel?
This is Christ in the Mount of Olives, composed by the one and only Beethoven.
Dang.
Yeah, I think this is a really great example of, inspired art by Christians, for Christians, to inspire awe in God. And I think, it's a great topic to talk about, this was composed back in the early 1800s and kind of where Christian media is today.
Wow. What do you think, Trish? Should we talk about that?
I'm definitely awe-inspired, so yeah, let's dig into that.
There it is. We should have a montage of all of our guests doing that.
Welcome to the Tipsy Theology Podcast. We got a special episode for you. This is the first time that me and Paul have both been on the show for a guest episode. So why don't our guest introduce himself?
Introduce yourself.
As all guests do.
Of course.
Hello, my name is Daniel. I am a filmmaker, artist from the state of Ohio, and I'm here to kind of talk about, my perspective on Christian media I am a Christian who makes art. And hopefully at some point in my career, I'll be making some Christian art.
Yeah. And Daniel's also one of my best and closest friends in the whole world.
Aww.
And he's here to talk about Christian media.
Yeah.
Hooray. But anyway, before
Daniel,
we get into it...
Daniel, let me ask you before we get into it. Sorry to cut you off, Paul.
Well, we're going to start pouring shots, so you can ask him.
This that's the thing. I was going to ask him, are you okay with that? Did you sign the disclaimer?
Oh,
okay with what?
The shot disclaimer.
We have to ask.
For legal reasons.
You drove me here, so yes. Yes, I am fully aware, and I am not under any narcotics in any way that I am...
You did just take an Advil, though.
That sounded really suspicious.
Yeah, I just took pills. It opens with me reading a piece of paper. I am not under the influence of drugs in any way that I fully sign off on taking 3 shots.
Actually, I want to do this one last.
Okay.
I think it'd be fun.
Okay.
Because it's we have BT, then we're going into more BT.
Yeah, I wish I had some Buffalo Trace with me right now.
So we're going to start with... Let's start with this one.
Okay, because if that one's the worst, let's start with the worst.
It might be.
We can hopefully, if it's bad, we can wash it out of our...
So this, as you know, Trey and I are huge vodka people.
Nope.
And so I went out and bought a bottle of vodka because the bottle looked really pretty. It says Van Gogh, Vincent Van Gogh.
Well, he was an artist.
Acai blueberry.
Perfect.
Wow,
yeah,
so we're very much into the art side of it. Ooh, and it's purple.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Wait, it's purple vodka?
Yeah, because the blueberry and the acai. I feel like a basic white girl when I say.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like a salad, but vodka. But Trey, you're not doing shots with us? You got some?
Oh, he's got some.
I got a shot right here.
There he is.
Vodka. That is Russian vodka.
It's
just potato vodka.
Yep.
Cheers, cheers.
Cheers. I like that.
Mm, it's actually not bad.
Yeah, I definitely taste the blueberry, but it's not overwhelming.
Yeah. The vodka, the alcohol flavor, you feel it, but you don't taste any of it.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
And that's the best thing that can happen to vodka is you don't taste it.
You do feel it.
You do feel it. Yeah, so I think that's kind of fun.
Okay.
I might drink some more of that.
What do we have next?
So this one is Fernet. This is the other one. Trey and I had this last time. I don't know what we're doing with that one. We had the Menta. This is the Branca.
You had it last time.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I had it last time. You're right. Dang it. Yeah. I keep forgetting.
I know.
So sad.
It's like I'm there.
It is. It's like you're here. So this is just a whole bunch of herbs and stuff.
Mm.
I think it's a... Is it a... I don't know what the base is.
That's got an interesting smell to it.
But it's like, yeah, like everything you can imagine is in there.
I know you've already done this a lot on the podcast, but you're going to hear that a lot. This episode is, yeah, that's interesting.
That's interesting.
That's something we say every 10 seconds, probably.
But hey, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, Trey.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers to you.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that one was the worst.
Really? Because I actually really like it.
I don't like
it's powerful because there's a lot.
Yeah. That you ever get those cough medicines that like have the herbs inside?
It's a little like that, yeah.
That feels like that was liquid, like the herbs, if you just made them a drink. That's what I just had.
Initially I think it was like use it for like medicinal stuff. A whole bunch of herbs. So, like, you're sick, take a shot of that.
Yeah. So my only memory is like tasting that is whenever I'm sick and feeling horrible.
Oh.
So literally as it's going down, I'm just so like, just oh, like... yes, I remember having strep
throat. Oh, yes,
throat.
I'm sick. Well, so it's funny because so my cousin likes to take a shot of it typically every night, like after meals and stuff.
Because
after you eat and then you take a shot of that, you feel like you hadn't eaten yet. It's really weird. Like
I need a palate cleanser with some potato chips.
Some russet, right? Chips.
Yeah, dark russet potato chips.
Can you hear this, Troy?
Oh, I hear it very well. I'm really jealous.
Well, hey.
Those are like the best chips.
Hey! He knows.
I haven't even
No, they really are. They are so good.
Yeah.
Daniel, crazy. Before y'all take the shot, I have one more question I want to get into. You know, because we do this podcast, and the more controversial element of it is the drinking part. So I want to ask you, what is a good and healthy approach to alcohol? What's your take?
I think alcohol should be enjoyed and never used as a treatment for just about anything, unless maybe it's like, I don't know, you're treating a wound. Or or maybe you're like on the battlefield and the only thing someone has is a flask right before they're about to cut your leg off.
What about heart wounds, Daniel? What about heart wounds?
Yeah,
what if you're like really sad?
Yeah, I think that's totally the optimal time to like really, you know, let yourself. Yeah, I just feel like you should never
actually, after that answer, I'm gonna
my approach is like I never consume alcohol when I'm in a vulnerable state. If it's ever there to treat an issue, then that's the last time I should be consuming it. But when I'm in a good state, then I'm all for it. And never to totally drunkenness level. If I black out, I also think I went too far.
Well, so with James, our last guest we had on, our good friend Jameson, one of the things he was talking about was he's uncomfortable drinking in public because of the image that it can present to some people. So how do you feel about that? Obviously, you're drinking in public right now.
Yeah, I am. That is a good question. I think, again, it's like, I think of like the sophisticated man like drinking a brandy or something like that, and I'm okay with an image of, again, it being like a treat enjoyed during a good time. But like, yeah, if I'm out there getting drunk on like cheap beer and I'm putting out an image of like alcohol being used irresponsibly like that, then yeah, I probably would be uncomfortable. Drinking in public in like a setting.
As an overall, you're like, I'm fine if people see me drinking, but
yeah,
just the context of what it looks
like. I'm okay with people seeing me drinking, like at least like this. So,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of how I've just approached it. So,
well, anyway, cheers,
cheers,
cheers.
Good old Buffalo Trace.
Dude, that's the original vanilla.
All right, and then Paul.
He's just like, all right.
I got to work later. And I'm like, yeah, we're going on vacation.
But hey, you gave us a request today for what you want to drink.
I wanted to drink, I've had a Moscow Mule, but then I actually just learned about the idea of a Kentucky Mule. Which sounds way better because instead of vodka, it's my favorite, which is whiskey. So
yeah,
It sounds like the best of both worlds.
So we have Kentucky Mules today. And I'm jealous Kentucky because Mule. Trey's glass looks cool way better than ours.
Yeah, I'm jealous of Trey's cup there.
The hammered copper right there.
Yeah.
But Trey, what did you use for your bourbon? So we use Buffalo Trace.
I use my Chattanooga bourbon, my Chattanooga whiskey.
Ooh.
Because that's all I got right now.
You have to share some of that this week.
Yeah, I can bring it if you want.
I'm bringing my Buffalo Trace.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'll be a great time.
bring the absinthe. Do not forget the
yes.
absinthe.
Yes. I've been wanting to try that so bad. So for my birthday, Trey got me a bottle of absinthe with like a gorgeous spatula. Yeah, Trey and Chloe came through on that.
Nice.
You're welcome. I know what you need.
It was, and it had a picture of Van Gogh on the front too. I was like, "This, why, how does this get better?" But I'm very excited to try it.
Yeah, no, it looks beautiful.
Well, I was telling Daniel earlier when we went out and bought the Buffalo Trace, I was like, you know, it's funny because I feel the last few times Trey and I have like, it was a weird episode where we cried. We've had absinthe.
Yeah, and after my experience recounting silence to you, that's probably not a good idea.
So, the all absinthe show is going to be a little interesting when we do that one.
It's just going to be a cry
all
fest.
Absinthe all the
nothing
time.
But absinthe. But hey, cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, cheers.
Wait, how do we do this before? I got to like go.
Oh. What do you think? Clink?
Clink.
that ice definitely melted in there.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of watered it down a little bit.
Oh, like a lot.
Oh, that's good.
A lot. I know how to fix it.
Paul, yes. that'll warm it up.
Yeah, so I had to transport some ice and it melted.
Yeah.
Do you want, I think we have another ginger beer. I can pour some of that in there. That'll bring some of the bubbles back at least.
Okay, yeah.
But, okay, I won't move. But anyway, Christian Media.
Yeah, Christian Media.
Yes.
It makes me laugh because... it's popular. It's like Nickelback. It's popular to hate.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was a big effort in the 90s to kind of like make it cool and make it mainstream.
Like,
and,
what if it was hip?
And the fallout of that today is it's Nickelback.
But I'll say for myself, and Trey, I want to hear you say your thoughts about it overall, and then we'll let the expert start talking. But I know for me, it's like, okay, so. It's a huge range of things. Even trying to define it is kind of confusing. But I guess when I typically think of Christian media, I think of, we think of the really pop, like mainstream Christian artists.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christian movies like the, I don't know if I can name names. I guess I can. Like, you know, like The God's Not Dead or like Fireproof.
Oh, yeah,
and
Fireproof.
Like, what is the
other
one? Flywheel? Like those guys?
I don't know, Flywheel.
I think it's the same dude.
Okay. They all but, like the kind of pure flicks and
yeah,
crowd. Yeah,
yeah. I think of that stuff when it comes to movies. When it comes to music, it's like, oh, what do they play on the radio?
Mm-hmm,
you know, you've got like Francesca Battistelli or like Mercy Me and Mike's Chair.
Yeah, whatever's on the fish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think of stuff like that, and I've got a lot of opinions, but overall, it's a little cringe.
Yeah. I think the word to describe it usually is cringe.
But Trey, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's I think cringe is the right word to use there, and I think it's also like there Christian media is so much larger than those popular stuff on the radio and the God's Not Dead Fireproof type movies that you were talking about. But at the same time, those are also the most popular manifestations of Christian media.
Yeah.
So it's worthwhile to critique them and to study them and try to understand what's going on with why do they think this is a good way to express the faith, right? Why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just
let's just shove it down their
rant.
Throat.
Yeah.
There's
and
time
I will
for
say,
that.
From my experience, my least favorite genre of movies and music. Are the Christian type, but
yeah.
My most favorite are those that my favorite music and my favorite movies are those that are not nominally Christian, like not Christian media, but often they're created by Christians. But it's this implicit religious theme that comes through. That's what strikes me as, well, awe-inspiring, really, and moving, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how... There we go already.
Interesting.
my first words opening up.
Can we put a counter? down.
Just a ding. But yeah, the way that you're talking about how, and I hear this from a lot of Christians, of being like some of the best Christian media or like Christian values comes from non-Christian sources, or it might be an artist, but they're making something that is not explicitly, you know, evangelizing or something like that. And I do think that is pretty common amongst a lot of people, that it's usually when it's not purposefully trying to, you know, we use the word propaganda. It's not purposely trying to, you know, send out like almost a political message in a way.
Yeah.
Is where you find true art, true beauty, true true messages of someone's values. So yeah.
It's funny because I know when it comes to, I think I've heard this, I heard someone tell me about this in interviews. This is like third hand news at this point. But I thought it was like the guy who made a lot of those like very popular Christian movies. One of the things that he said, he's like, I'm not trying to make a good movie. I'm trying to make a sermon in a movie format. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, that changes it.
I do know there was a presentation done by one of the guys who worked with the producers on like Fireproof and those types of movies. And I think God's Not Dead as well. And he said how they personally identify, and they fully admit this, that they're like, we're not filmmakers. We are not artists. We are preachers, and we are making sermons as movies. And so in that, it has already on its own removed itself from trying
the whole
to
genre.
Yeah, of trying to be an attempt at like an artistic expression.
Yeah.
Purely being a vehicle for like a political message.
Mm.
So yeah.
Well, especially with God's Not Dead, like that movie specifically. You start out with this straw man atheist professor who does not have the real true arguments that those types of people in real life are bringing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and have my favorite this, is like the premise of it alone would never happen.
Yeah, exactly.
The premise of like like he's like, we're going to throw the curriculum out and you need to write down a piece of paper, God's Not Dead. It's like, all right, it's an interesting story, but that would never happen in real life.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a similar...
Right, no way! Just throw my argument away.
So when I was going to...
actually?
This is funny now because I was so conservative at the time. It made me mad. But when I was in high school, I did some dual enrollment at the community college. And I had a professor who I couldn't stand, so I dropped his class. And then I found out a week later that he made the students write down F. Donald Trump.
No
on a piece
way.
Of paper.
Oh.
So that's as close as of a story as I can get.
Wow.
But,
that one makes more sense, though, compared to the two.
That one makes it makes a lot more sense, but at the same time,
see that
still
happening
not warranted.
Over... Yeah.
Still...
Yeah. Yeah, that's a... I feel like that's sort of an abuse of power in
a
position of being a teacher. But
and Trey's like, it's not that I don't want to write it.
And you know what?
Well, whatever my opinions are, it's kind of, I do feel uncomfortable that you're forcing all these people in this room to do it.
No, at the time contrarian. It made me mad. But a couple of years ago, I remembered that and I was like, you know what? And I got a piece of paper and I wrote it down and I sent him it in the
and you mailed it to Donald Trump. He's like, what is this?
Anyways,
but
I didn't.
But yeah, back to it.
Yeah. So I know we were kind of talking about like going back to the origin, sort of trying, you know, of course, like a good Christian movie, we're going to try and solve the problem. But unlike all these other Christian movies, I don't know if we'll have a solid answer, but we can provide our perspective. And So yeah, I think that, you know, a good note that I kind of came away with when I was trying to do my research coming into this, the little bit that I did, was that, you know, throughout history, it was like you had these great artists, you mm-hmm. know, Beethoven, Michelangelo, Leonardo, you know, every great artist worked for the church. Now, that was for both economic reasons as well as faith reasons, as well as political reasons.
Yeah.
With a theocracy that kind of ruled at the time. But at the end of the day, when those churches, you know, commissioned art to be done, I think a big consistent theme that you saw was that the goal was first to impress and inspire awe in those who saw it and witnessed it.
Yeah.
And to do that was to be like, let's make some of the best, most beautiful looking art that'll stand for centuries, you know. And there was a shift that happened. And I don't know, I've heard a lot of claims, but I haven't been able to find a lot of like solid evidence. And I'm sure it's out there that the shift happened during like United States evangelicalism in its early years, of a shift from that being like, we are first here to make, you know, beautiful, awe-inspiring art, and shifting over to let us use art to evangelize the gospel.
Oh.
And in that shift, yeah. in that fundamental shift as an artist, I know that, and we'll get into this moving forward, but like when you suddenly start to like restrict it to a very like specific way that it has to be said and it has to be put, you're already setting yourself up for failure. At the very least, you're making it way more difficult to create something of artistic merit.
Yeah. Well, so I'll ask too. So removing the idea of like the propaganda side of it, we're just talking about the art, because there are people mm-hmm. out there that, you know, regardless of like the, you know, the God's Not Dead people who are like clearly just making sermons into, yeah. you know, yeah. movies. It's like there are people making just as equal quality, mm-hmm. no matter the budget. Like there are some people, some of those movies have like $several million budget.
Yeah.
And some people have like a couple $100 as a budget. But it's yeah. like the quality's about the same overall. So it's yeah. like, so with that, it's like, okay, so let's look at the art side of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what is involved with that making the art?
And you just mean this in general?
Yeah, just in general.
Well,
so like we'll talk about movies right now, since that's
yeah, yeah. So my background is filmmaking. And I've made I've been like the cinematographer and sort of like a production assistant and stuff on small independent films and stuff in Ohio. And so from my experience, I know, and I've said this before, that it's like, okay, you start out with the goal of you want to make a film, right? Just a feature length film. That's it. Okay. That's already very difficult to do. Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't even brought in the word I want to make a good or like a quality, you know, feature film. It's just, you want to make something that's like, let's say an hour and a half long. That is alone like a huge task. Now you want it to be a film with a narrative and it has actors in it. Okay. So now you got to find people who are willing to act in your movie, people who are, you know, someone who's willing to hold a boom pole, you know, you have to pay these people. You have to find someone who's, you know, good at photography and can make it look nice. These are already difficult challenges. And you'll find that, you know, we talk about bad Christian films. There are plenty of terrible movies that came out just last year that, you know, were not Christian films. But Hollywood produces them, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
And so now you already see that Hollywood. Yeah, Ohio has
just
a big
beating up on Ohio here.
But Hollywood already has a very difficult challenge of making good movies. You know, you can listen to tons of film critics talking about all the issues with Hollywood.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing, you know, originality is dead, and they just make sequels and they just make remakes and stuff like
that.
Even
the thing with like color correcting, it's like as simple as that.
Yeah.
It's like there's people went on massive tirades for months about like, oh, they didn't color correct these videos.
Yeah,
these movies.
Like, yeah, yeah. There's a whole debate about like the coloring of the Marvel movies and stuff.
Yeah.
So on top of all that, right, this is just purely on like a statistical level. Now you add on, so we already know that Hollywood struggles with that. You add on an additional modifier of it has to promote Christian values. Okay, well, you've already taken this incredibly difficult challenge and made it even harder because now the pool of talent that you can reach out to has been restricted.
Yeah.
And the goal that you're trying to do has shifted from I want to make a good movie, a quality movie, a movie that, you know, is artistic or has artistic merit, to I want a movie that does that, but does it in this specific way that it, you know, you're just already sort of, I wouldn't say you're setting yourself up for failure. I do think it's possible, but you are making it so, so incredibly difficult. I don't even think it's like on a, you know, a factor of two. I think it's like a factor of 10 that or more that you are, you know, making that even more difficult. And so the people who are you're going to find who are like, yeah, I want to make a Christian movie, a film that, you know, inspires Christian values and are also. Yeah, so they're just alone that are willing to do that are going to be like very stark evangelicalist, you know, the type of people who are going to want to make like a movie like God's Not Dead. But then to find artists who want to explore these ideas and ask questions and tackle more difficult, more difficult subjects, you have to cast a wider net, you know, to find those people.
Yeah.
So. That just purely on like an economic level, you know, already sort of, I think, explains some of why Christian media is bad. But obviously we can go deeper into the criticism of like what, you know, songs and movies are trying to accomplish is already sort of.
Yeah, because it seemed like there was a point where it kind of fell behind. Uh-huh. You know, it's like you've got. Basically, religion leading the way as far as art goes. They're constructing these gorgeous buildings. They're making this fantastic art. This, you know, this incredible masterpieces. And then all of a sudden, it's like popular culture, secular culture, we'll even say, is like that kind of caught up and then progressed forward. And it seemed like Christian religious media kind of like fell behind. And then now we're kind of in a place where it's just copying what's good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we have Mad Max. And then you have Waterworld, which is, you know, not a Christian movie, but it's like, all right, what if we had Mad Max, but it was water?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have PureFlix, like, what if we had Mad Max, but it's awful?
Yeah, Revelation Road.
Yeah. And so it's like, it's funny, it's like, why does it seem like we see these artists, it's like, you know, there's an industry behind it too, let's not ignore that, but it's like, instead of being like, hey, why don't we get back to the forefront of creating, there's like, what if we just copy what's good? And just make it not as good.
So I think you're really hitting on a point here that I wanted to mention, which is like you're just talking about architecture, right?
And yeah.
Like the beautiful kind of Gothic churches that we had back in the day. Now, you know, you look at like maybe a Hillsong church. you'll notice that, you know, these mega churches and sort of the business mindset, because, you know, church is a business, that these mega churches have is quantity. You know, it's all about mass and just volume. So these churches start to just get more and more like a box, you know, how many people can we fit in here? How many, you know, how many services can we have, like kind of people coming through? It's less about quality of salvation and more about quantity of salvation. You know, you think about when you were a kid or something, or you go to like these you know, these kind of like youth events or something where they would want to kind of be like, you know, oh, so many people were saved tonight, you know, or so many people were saved last week. And I don't ever want to criticize someone's salvation or kind of like, you know, put it down or something like that. But you do know that some of those people might have said something in a moment. But if you kind of follow them, you know, even just a few weeks later, there wasn't much change that happened, you know, and it was like there's like sort of that in some churches and really in a lot of churches, there's that focus more on numbers and volume than there is on quality of relationships.
Because we care more about hearing someone say what we want them to say as opposed to following up and discipling that person who claims something.
Yeah. And changing hearts and minds. Is a much more, well, I mean, you had an episode on kind of like, you know, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the word. not being a psychologist, but being a counselor. Counseling.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that is not a like, oh, well, how do I change someone to make them better? You know, or like, how do I, you know, what questions do I ask them to like make them, you know, completely change and be a different person? You know, that's, you're going into it with the wrong mindset. Sort of. So in a similar way, it's like, you know, how do we make a movie that, you know, sort of like not just brings people to Christ, you know, but it's like, how do we make someone, you know, believe in our Christ? So
I want to go back to architecture for a second, because that's, I think it, especially with like, this is just coming to me with the mega church, but thinking of these beautiful cathedrals that were being built in like from the time of Christ up until, you know, Protestantism. I mean, there's a couple of things that we could explain for why churches are the way they are now. Like the Protestant churches, the Protestant church has a much lower emphasis on beauty in general, and therefore in their architecture, it explains it, shows that, it reveals that. But also, this is really upsetting me with the megachurch, is they don't take the time to build a beautiful building. They take the time to build a building they can fit as many people in as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, and why should they build a beautiful building? Like, these cathedrals would take 100 years to build. Because because there was something deeply significant about the building itself and how it pointed toward the absolute God. Mm. But with these mega churches, we don't need to build a beautiful quality building. We just need to build an efficient building, because in 20 years, mm-hmm. when the pastor steps down, that church is just going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. the mega church is yeah. built up around this pastor.
A singular person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you say that too. You made me think about even the whole argument and kind of concept about, you know, making something flashy. So it's like, you know, we have the people, it's like, yeah, we see these gorgeous buildings with like incredibly ornate stained glass windows and like, you know, railings or whatever it is, ceilings are like really intricate. And we're like, that's beautiful, that's awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have like a light and a fog machine on stage, it's like, how dare you, you Satan worshiper? And it's interesting with that. It's kind of like, it's something I'm thinking about right now as we're talking, but it's like, isn't that kind of the same thing? Because people are like, oh, we don't want anything that'll distract. We just want a building that we can fit people in. We don't want anything that'll distract them.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's like, it's viewed as a bad thing to have like a production, you know, any amount mm-hmm. of production when you're doing worship or doing a service.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
I think
fleshing this out.
Well, I would say the point of the architectural beauty, the stained glass, all of these things, and I don't want to diss like the fog machines. I think they're cool. They're fun. I don't care.
Cool. I'm still kind of figuring out what I think about it.
Yeah, I think I just qualify those two things in completely different categories, because the purpose of these intricate designs and this beautiful stained glass is to point you toward God.
Right.
Like the point of the architecture of a church building and all of it is supposed to, and we see this in Catholic churches and Orthodox churches in the way mm-hmm. we can tell Catholic theology and Orthodox theology by the design of their building. Like, step inside a Catholic building,
yeah.
it's designed in the shape of a cross, and then on the walls you're going to see the stages of the cross. You're going to see the stained glass images of the Passion of Christ. And then you step inside an Orthodox church, and when you look up, you're going to see Jesus. Like, it points you to Christ.
Yeah, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Orthodox churches are sort of shaped like a dome.
Yeah,
right?
They have this dome, and then at the top of the dome, they have a painting mm-hmm. of Christ, and you look up and you see Christ.
Yeah,
the fog machines don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, so it's interesting. I guess that's a very interesting point, and that does kind of change the way I'm thinking about this. But I think overall, I'm kind of thinking about the idea of like creating a, it's like you're creating a moment for people. So it's like when you walk mm-hmm. into a building, you see like, oh my gosh, here are like these incredible stained glass windows that tell an incredible story. It's like that creates a moment of awe for me, of like, I'm standing in awe of who God is.
Mm-hmm.
And just the best that we can do to identify, you know, to relate to that in some way.
Yeah.
The best we humanly can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in a sense you could, again, it can be used wrongly. It's like, I feel like in a sense, like if you have like a good production, it can point you to a moment of like, wow, this is, you know, awe inspiring of who mm-hmm. God is. And you just happen to use some lights to get me there.
Yeah. Now, Trey, wasn't that a debate early on with churches that sort of created a separation of using imagery or like creating the image of God? That...
This was a big deal when the Protestant movement broke out. Oh, the Protestants fought about it all the time. I couldn't tell you anything about anything the Catholics or the Orthodox people were saying, but I know like Calvin and Zwingli and Luther got into it over this stuff because they, instrumentally, Zwingli was against instruments altogether. He was like, no instruments, they completely distract. And Calvin and Luther were more chill, if I remember correctly.
And it's funny how, I don't know, like, and maybe he had more, you know, of an argument there, but it's even funny, like, you know, you think about like the trumpets that you're going to hear, you know, and it's like there's all these references to sound and music and images that you know, yeah, all these visions and that the, you know, the prophets had, or like, you know, that Paul had, and you're reading these books in both the Old and New Testament that are very visual, very, you know, descriptive, and inspire imagery in your mind, that then it's like, no, like, we're not, you know, we're not going to try and even tackle that in any sort of way.
Yeah, so
I think that's, go ahead.
Go for it, Trey.
No, I think that is to our demise that we think in those ways, because I don't think we realize how much of an effect that the arts have on us. Like, to me personally, the arts have a larger effect on me than sermons do, where they're just laying out the dogma of the religion of how we should live, right? Things that affect me more are paintings and novels and music. Mm-hmm. These things draw me closer to God.
Yeah. Well, so that's why I'm kind of going into it a little bit. So I'm glad you said that. That's a perfect segue.
You're welcome.
Kind of back into, it's like, it's perfect. Like, you know, back into media. So it's like, okay, so we see the effect that art has on people, you know, because there's the whole argument of like, oh, is it distractive or manipulative? You know, it's like, oh, you can play this thing or you can, you know, show this thing. It'll affect people a certain way. We know that it'll do that. And it's like, we see the impact that media has.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's funny because it can also have the very negative impact.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you, like you said, it's like art is more effective to you in a lot of ways than a sermon is, you know, because it's like, instead of someone just being like, A, B, you're just like, show me some interest in, you know, intricate stuff in here. Whereas like a good movie can do that.
Mm-hmm. So this is something I was really excited to talk about. Is like,
I was trying to tee it up for you.
thank you. But yeah, so you're absolutely right in that, you know, experiences is really what kind of like shifts and makes us open our mind to things.
Yeah.
So, you know, a great Christian film that we were talking about earlier is something like Silence, right? Martin Scorsese's film about, you know, Portuguese Catholic priests trying to spread the gospel in Japan, I think in the, I want to say like 1600s.
About that time, yeah.
So imagine if you distilled the message of this film down into a sermon, right? And you just were sitting there for 40 minutes in a church, and you had one guy sort of explaining this story to you and wrapping it up, you know, in a message of like, and so you know what that means? Like, never, you know, let go of your faith. You know, like that's sort of like, and you, everybody kind of claps and says amen, and everybody like leaves, you know. But now imagine spending almost 3 hours. The film's about two hours and 40 minutes. So imagine spending about 3 hours witnessing that, you know, and it's beautifully photographed and beautifully acted, performed, and written piece of art that puts you in that situation, which is so much of what, like, preachers try and do, is they always try and bring you back to, you know, the suffering of Christ, and, you know, you guys really don't remember what it was like, you know, and they're always trying to be descriptive and always trying to remind people like, no, this is how bad it was, right? So in the same way, that's what this film is trying to really show you. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, but what if you, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, you say you wouldn't die, or you would die for Christ, or you would die for your faith. But now imagine, you know, six other people are suffering, and you aren't.
Would you,
know,
let others die for your faith?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, it's one thing to ask that question. Now let's explore it through art, through film, through performance. That experience is what can really open someone's mind. And you can tell, like, I get passionate about it, because that is the power of film, is like this just attempt at having people have an experience that really can be mind altering, and really can people have people have like this empathetic experience to someone else's, you know, viewpoint. And so, with what you're saying about, you know, why is it that, you know, film can do that, or art can do that, but, you know, kind of sermons can't. I think that is the importance. And in the same way, outside of Christian media, secular media has the same problem. If you ever heard of like magician comedians or musician comedians, that was like a big thing. Now, you know, we talk about like there's a lot of bad Christian media in the 90s. Well, to be fair, the 90s had a lot of bad experimentation. And one of the problems,
I mean, over every aspect, it wasn't just in the Christian realm.
And one of the problems was if you went in the world of like stand-up comedy, you had musician comedians and you had magician comedians.
I've never heard of them before.
Yeah, and it was a huge thing, magician comedians. And it was like, hey, you're not a really funny stand-up? Learn a magic trick. Oh, you're not a really funny, or you're not a really good magician? Learn a dick joke.
And that, do you have to bleep that?
And that was a huge like industry for a very short time, because it was a gimmick. That's what it was. It was a gimmick.
Yeah.
And in the same way, I can understand how certain critics would be like, oh, these things distract, right? Because at times they can be used to distract from a poor message, right? It's like, oh, God is great. God is great. Oh, I'm going to play this beautiful melody to kind of like say, God is great. You know, that can totally be done. And that could be a poor or a misuse of those artistic mediums. But you can also, at the same time, so a great example is, like, I remember I was hearing one terrible bit of a comedian who's like playing the piano and trying to make like a very racist joke, and it was like the joke does not work to begin with, on top of it being racist, like just bluntly. And then he's just like saying this thing and then like playing the piano and then like says something and then like plays the piano. And it's just, it's so bad. It's so cringe. And that is like, the piano is being used there to distract from the joke, or try and like soften the edges of it. But then you have someone like, I don't know how familiar you are with Bo Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, he's sort of a musician comedian. And he had that special that just got released on Netflix. It was Inside. I think it was Inside.
Inside. I watched it.
That was great. And, you know, take like the song that he does about like Welcome to the Internet, you know, that could be a comedic bit. But if it was just him being like, the internet's pretty crazy and, you know, kind of blah, 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 it would not nearly have the same impact of this song that sort of like helps and is used as an instrument, as a vehicle to guide you through these ideas. So it is reinforcing and improving a concept, not distracting from it. We're already over time. But
no, we're good. We're good.
So
just ignore the timer.
So that's I think like examples of how art could be used to distract. And maybe there were churches, I don't know. Maybe there were churches at that time that were using the arts to sort of distract a poor message.
Hmm.
But that does not mean that art distracts from our God.
And I think that's where it depends on the usage of that too, where it's like, and this is what I think is beautiful about art, is that it can explore something that is like an intangible in a way that makes it more tangible for us to understand, that you couldn't get any other way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's one thing to hear someone tell you a story. And it's something to hear someone really tell you a story. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's one thing for me to be like, so yesterday I went to the store, and then another thing for me to be like, so yesterday I had this experience and blah, 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 and really like guide you through everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, I think that's where like a movie like Silence, which I haven't seen, but I've heard Daniel talk about it. Yeah. It's like that's where I think it's great because it reminds me of Job, and that's what I thought of when I was listening to it. It's like you have all these people removed from the situation, telling you like, you know, this is we have Proverbs, very very simple. Just good, bad, bad. You know, good, good, bad, bad. Mm-hmm. And you have Ecclesiastes, you're like, well, I don't know. I'm going to philosophize about it a little bit and like bad, good, good, bad sometimes.
Yeah.
And then you have Job who's like living this thing. He's like, check this out though.
Yeah.
And we see it. What I was hearing when you were explaining this movie was like, it's kind of walking you through that. Like, what does real life look like? Mm-hmm. And since it's based on a real story as well,
yeah.
It's like we see that it's like this is reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a reality that I could never, most likely I'll never experience in my life. It's like I will personally, most likely, 99% of the time, never have this experience. But I can watch this movie that was so masterfully made
mm-hmm.
and have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's the importance of art. It's like it can take you through this journey that you will most likely never have personally.
Yeah, I always say kind of filmmaking is a vehicle for empathy.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way I wanted to phrase that was like through the arts, we can there are certain realities that cannot the best realities, honestly, that cannot be put into language, into words.
Yeah.
But they can be felt. And that is mm-hmm. art is the vessel for feeling these things.
Yeah,
feeling
yeah.
these realities, like these, mm-hmm. the art is a medium for feeling the goodness of God and the beauty of God. So they can be used to point us toward the divine, and mm-hmm. it's
yeah.
wonderful. So I get,
yeah,
I love this topic. It excites me.
So I'm kind of a Paul the Builder over here, and so I'm like, how do we fix it? So like for you, how would you say we look at Christian media? And sure, there are some really, really great pieces, and there's some great musicians even that are creating really good stuff. But then there's like a majority that's like, it's not that good. And I'm picking on Christianity,
mm-hmm.
Christian media in this sense. We could say the same thing about other, you know, non-Christian art. But in the Christian art, it's like, how do we fix it? How does it get to a place where right now it's like when someone hears it, they're just like, ugh.
Yeah.
To a place where like, oh, yeah, that's probably going to be good.
Well, you know, I think that something that art is trying to always do, at least, you know, good art is like it is sort of tackling controversial questions and subjects. And that is definitely something that the Bible does. Right. You know, is mm-hmm. like a loving, all powerful creator during a, you know, war and strife and horror, you know, like through the prophet's times and things like that, that Christian art, at least in the current state, is trying to provide a 40-minute sermon, you know, into yeah. a 2-hour movie with a perfect, you know, nice bow, you know, finishing off the message at the end of the day. And they are a product that is supposed to be used as like a very simple devotional sort of device that can be spread through churches. I know that was one of the reasons that the Passion of Christ was like such a popular and financially successful film was that Christians were able to use it to do like devotionals and stuff and like do showings of it at churches. And then that's where I think you get the industry of films like PureFlix. What I want to see more of is things like PureFlix, or any, I use them as like, cause that's just why
they're the go-to.
They're the go-to, but any, you know, Christian media that sort of falls in that, whether it's music or film or any other medium, they are trying to just go to the parts of the Bible that like we think that we clearly understand and we can put a pin in it. And it's like, this is the message and we're going to make a movie about it. I want to see more approaches like Silence, which I would put on par of like a book like Ecclesiastes or Job, yeah. right? Where it is like, let's explore these ideas in a realistic setting. And you know what? We might not walk away with a true answer or like a solid yeah. bow, but it wow. inspires empathy in these situations. And it does try and explore them in attempts of an answer. And it's okay to walk away with not something that you can write down in one sentence, you know?
Yeah.
We believe in like this being that is indescribable, you know, incomprehensible. And yet, pastors for decades, if not centuries, have been trying to distill him down into 40 minutes.
Yeah.
The and indescribable think, God in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
A series that is 40 part sermon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what's, yeah, I think that's what's interesting about all of this as well. When I think about it, is that we're trying to make things too simple.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it seems to be a theme on our podcast, that concept. When it's like, that's where I think Christian media, I'll even go as far as say it's failed in a lot of ways. We're like, mm-hmm. we've missed the original point of like, how do you try to take reality? How do you try to take intangibles, this something that is so indescribable, and try to describe it?
Mm-hmm.
And we've settled with like, well, there was a flood, and there was a bunch of Noahs, and a bunch of animals on an ark, and there was a rainbow. Done.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, people died. Like, even if you, yeah. however you take it, it's like, we look at the story, it's like, this is a grotesque story.
It's a brutal yeah. story, and we're teaching it to
it's
children all
brutal.
The time. It's
yeah.
the first we're story like, we teach them.
Look at all these happy giraffes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, look at everybody squeezed on this little ark. We're all good. And, yeah.
And that's where I think it's like we're missing that part of discipleship. And mm-hmm. that's where I think, I'm speaking very generally here, it's like we look at churches. We're so focused on the mega church idea. How do we fit all these people in this big building we created?
Yeah.
How do we get them all in here?
Mm-hmm.
And not, what are we actually teaching them?
Yeah.
And I think that's where we see this like mass exodus of a lot of people growing up in the church, then leaving because they're like, well, you're not dealing with any of the problems I actually have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think we see that's art. That's where that needs to kind of take over more is like, let's try to explore these ideas, you know, these things that people deal with and struggle with that can't really be explained. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. There's a big effort of saving face, I think, with oh, sorry, if you have something to say.
Yeah, I want Daniel to talk mostly. It's, he's yeah. our guest, right? But I do want to say, I think it's a theological problem, and I have no idea how much time we have over here, but it's a theological
problem.
So we've
got like 8 minutes left. Annie is tell us to wrap up.
All right, I'll give 2 minutes and then we'll focus on Daniel completely.
Yeah,
but I do think the Christian media right now is a problem of theology. It is a lack of. It's. I don't want to just completely berate the evangelical church, but there's a lack of depth in the evangelical church right now, and they want to make good feeling movies, right? And that's not what we need. We need to be thrown into the depths of the seas and to experience the human condition in all of its ways. We can't just have a Sunday resurrection movie. We need to have the death on Friday and the complete unknowingness of Saturday. Like,
yeah,
our Savior is dead, and we don't know if he'll. We don't think he'll rise again. Actually, we're actually really sad because we have no hope. We are hopeless, and Christian media right now lacks the hope. And that's why people like Karl Marx would say stuff like religion is the opium of the masses. It's we come to the faith just to feel good rather than to actually feel the depths of the human condition. So it's at its peak worst right now, I think.
Yeah, there's like this market inefficiency.
Yeah.
We have a huge demand for help me deal with the suffering that I have. And we have the supply of Hallmark movies.
I was going to say, I was like, the word to describe is Hallmark, you know.
Bingo.
And I think that Christian theology throughout the centuries, as far as I understand it, you know, has tried to grapple with these questions. And it is sort of a conclusion of the Protestant evangelical, specifically like U.S. sort of, you know, like you can get very narrow of like our experience of that being very shallow, like you're talking about, and a lack of depth. But historically, and I think this is what gives me hope and gives me inspiration, is that It has been the catalyst to sort of start these very theological questions, and sort of, you know, there were popes and stuff trying to grapple with them in the past. And at the end of the day, you know, to use an outside example is sort of like, again, give us hope, is that in mathematics, I believe in the early 1900s, there was a huge debate sort of on infinity. And all these sort of like concepts that were kind of unknown, you know, there were certain people that there were like a split throughout, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, mathematics is known, you know, like that's something that like everyone can agree on. And it's like, no, within mathematics, there was this huge split like a century ago of people like kind of arguing on the concepts of infinity. And there were like very, very like stern beliefs that were made, and entire like theses written on like, no, it cannot be this way. It must be this way.
That's and, wild.
yeah. And it was, oh my gosh, when I remember my mathematics tutor in college and high school and stuff, she always talked about, she's like, oh, you think mathematics is like a known, you know, science. She's like, just go to any convention with mathematics or with mathematicians. And she's like, you'll just find all sorts of debate. But from that, from these arguments on infinity, it birthed, you know, computer science. It was the foundation for why we have this that's in our hands right now. And so even though there are these concepts where physicists would say that the idea of infinity doesn't exist, you know, it's just sort of a concept, the arguments about it, the debates that have been made about it, have birthed like some of the most important, you know, inventions of our time. And so in that, it is important to tackle these ideas, like you're saying, it is important to explore them, even if to this day we think, oh, you know, infinity is like this idea that like everybody, you know, every mathematician just sort of, it's a symbol that people write on a whiteboard, right? It's not. It's still debated to this day, but from it has come so much progress. In that same way, I think there is value in kind of diving headfirst into trying to answer these questions with no answer in sight, right? You know, that like that full just sort of existential dread or whatever on the Saturday, you know, of like, there is, I don't see the light yet and I'm trying to figure it out right now. There's absolutely value in trying to explore those ideas. And I think, so I wanted to finish off the episode sort of talking about good examples of Christian media.
So we've got like 1 minute left. So let's close the tab on this.
All right.
Daniel, I'm going to let you have the last words if you're okay with that, Trey.
Sure.
All right. So I did want to use this example because I knew I was going to do the same thing as like hound on Christian media and lack of depth right now. I think, you know, I want to recommend some great artists that people go listen to right now. As far as music is concerned, I think artists like The Grey Havens and Josh Garrels are two good examples of Christian artists trying to create poetry and music that is inspired by scripture. That, I mean, when I listen to it, I mean, obviously, sometimes it is trying to say something. Of course, it should. But it's not trying to preach, you know, it's trying to find a beauty in the messages from the Bible. And so I'd really recommend, again, The Grey Havens and Josh Garrels, I think, are two beautiful examples of that, where I listen to that music outside of like, oh, I feel kind of like I need to listen to some Christian media right now. And it inspires me. It creates a sense of awe in me. And then as far as films go, I think the number one example right now is Silence by Martin Scorsese. I think anyone who's willing to watch a very difficult and very adult film should watch it and study it. You know, fair warning there going into that.
Where can we find some of your stuff?
Oh, yeah. So my stuff, you can check out Get the Picks. That's the company that I've worked with in Ohio. And we've produced several feature films. I've been the cameraman cinematographer on two of them. And they are examples of Christians making media, not Christian media. But I think there's definitely themes in there that you can take away from it. And I would definitely, of course, recommend that you go check them out at getthepics.org. And then as well, you know, with everything we've been talking about, I currently have projects at Crispy Hippo. that you can check out, including actually a horror film that I'll be working on with another Christian artist. And that tackles very nebulous ideas about truth and trying to find your way in an ever-changing world and having a values and a framework, but one that is dynamic and ever-changing, that will be coming out within the next couple months. So, yeah, that's some examples.
That's cool. Yeah, there's so much left to this topic, I feel like, which is always, that's always the problem we have with most of these episodes. And it's like, yeah, there's so much more, but I would say you're doing Christian media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you're working toward. You might not be a, you know, you are a Christian. You might be making explicit Christian content,
mm-hmm.
but you're exploring life and you're exploring just the reality that we live inside of, which I would say is probably one of the most Christian things someone could do. So, Trey, do you have anything to finish us off with?
I just loved having Daniel on the show. That was fantastic.
Oh,
I'd
thank you.
Like, continue this conversation in the future, because I had so many more things I wanted to ask him and say. But
there's so much more.
Yeah.
It's true. But hey, thank you so much to Maximize Digital Media and Annie Lee for producing this episode. Thank you for Daniel for coming on this and
absolutely. This was a pleasure.
Talking away, and it's a good time. We like to jump all over the place, and I wish we could go for more time.
I want to go for like 2 more hours.
Oh, we easily have 2 more hours in here.
Yeah, yeah.
But Annie would hate us. But yeah, thank you so much. I want to have you on again. Trey, it's always a beauty to see you.
It's good to see you guys.
Trey, you're still figuring this out. Right now.
I'm going to see Trey like in the flesh pretty soon, which I'm excited for.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I can't wait.
And we'll continue it there.
We'll catch you guys on the next one.